in this pandemic times, it's really useful to use the online medium to, you know, spread my ideas and the stories, etc. When we speak about religion, some people will easily shut us down by saying, you're not a Muslim scholar. We don't talk about religion per se, but we still have the right to talk about our experience, our thought, and our own feelings.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pretty Good Podcast, Digital Rights in the Asia Pacific with Engage Media. I am Red, and today we will be talking to our guest, Febi Indirani. It's the second of two parts where we tackle the challenges related to freedom of religion and belief in Indonesia. She's a storyteller, whereas our first guest was an academic. So while we got the context, the way things are in multiple layers of society in Indonesia, we will talk to Febi about her particular experience as an advocate, as an activist, working on the movement to mainstream tolerant version of Islam and to contribute to a situation where there's more freedom of religion and belief in society. So without further ado, here is our conversation. I am joined today by Febi Indirani. She is a writer, a journalist, and a media practitioner. Her most prominent work is Bukan Perawan Maria, or Not Virgin Mary, a collection of short stories that examines the Islamic world in a critical yet empathetic and often humorous way. The book has been translated into English and Italian. She is also the creator of Relax, It's Just Religion, where she fosters tolerance among Muslim hardliners in Indonesia. She aims to mainstream the path of Islam that promotes compassion and self-criticism using the power of storytelling and art activities. Welcome to PGP, Febi.
Hello, Red. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. Now, to our audiences, this is actually the second part of a two-part series where we discuss the challenges of the online world, in particular when it comes to exercising the rights of freedom of religion and belief. In the first episode, we spoke with an academic, Leo Epafras, and he talked to us about the context of religion in Indonesian society. What we will hear from Febi is more about her advocacy as she tries to mainstream a more compassionate and a more tolerant version of Islam, and also contribute to a situation where there's more freedom of religion and belief. So Febi, can you tell us a bit about the work that you're doing right now?
Okay, so you have been mentioned Bukan Perawan Maria or Not Virgin Mary. It's actually the first short story collection in terms of this topic, which I named it as Magical Islamism. Well, it's actually a twisted to medical realism that have been used widely by South American writers. So Magical Islamism, it calls Islamism because it's rooted to myths, tradition, and living Islam daily, in particular in Indonesia. And it's magical because when we deal with religion, we always deal with the things that we cannot perceive, you know, physically, but influence many parts of our lives, like, you know, devils or angels, heaven, earth, hell, and heaven and hell, or what is sin, those kind of stuffs, those kind of the things that we cannot really perceive, and that's why it's magical. So that's actually the core of the stories. And the second book has already published last year, with the title Hunting for Muhammad, or Memburu Muhammad. So these two short story collections have been nationally published, and because Bukan Perawan Maria has published in 2017, but independently, and relaunched this year with a bigger publisher. So I have received more and more comments and feedbacks from readers all over Indonesia, and also because Bukan Perawan Maria has also published in Italy in 2019, and some of the stories from the book also translated to Germany and Japan. So I get feedbacks all over from different languages as well. It's something that have been their concern, and they're happy that there's a writer who voicing their concern as well. And beside the books, I invited other artists from various medium to respond to the stories. So for example, a dancer creating choreography from one of the story, you know, and perform it, and she can perform it without me being there. So it's already been their original art form for them. You know, they can perform it anywhere, and spreading the spirit of, you know, relax, it's just religion campaign. Also, it has been transformed to other medium like art audio, visual arts, short films. So it has been an like artivism kind of things, because many artists who have same concern and same point of views, they want to express their, you know, they want to express their feelings and thinking about religious life as well, with, you know, with their own ways, with their own perspectives. So that's a little bit happening in this last, you know, I started 2017, so in the last 5 years.
So as we learned from that previous conversation with Paleo Epaphras, religion is quite a sensitive and difficult issue for many to talk about in Indonesia. So I wanted to ask you, do you feel that this medium of art, storytelling, and even the use of myth makes it easier for you to send your message rather than being straightforward and just telling people, become more compassionate, right? Like writing a nonfiction essay, like instead of doing that, you told your message through the medium of story and myth. So do you think, was that a conscious effort in your part, or how conscious are you about the advocacy you're doing and the use of story as a medium for this?
Since the very beginning, I'm very conscious about it. Like, I deliberately use the story as a medium to convey different perspectives and different side of these different sides of interpretation towards religion, because living my life here in Indonesia, I have so many questions since I was a kid as well. So I don't want to preach people, but I want to make it in a form of story which make people, you know, don't read before they actually listen, because it has been the our habits these days, when, you know, we just, for example, read the titles for some news, and then, you know, just tweet it or spread it without actually give ourselves the time to, you know, read, and, you know, the time to just observe. So I think the form of storytelling and arts, I think this is our chance to give more deep thinking on something, or, you know, to give ourselves permission to enjoy without, you know, without responding immediately, those kind of stuff. So yeah, I think I consciously do it, and all the artists that eager to, you know, to join the campaign, they also have the same, you know, so-called concern, because at many times when we speak about religion, for example, or some people will easily shut us down by saying, you're not a Muslim scholar, for example. We don't talk about religion per se, but we still have the right to talk about our experience. We still have the right to talk about our, you know, thought and our own feelings living in religious society. And I think even though we are not, you know, we are not a religion scholar of anything, but we still can have the right to share that to other people by our own. So that's how it goes. That's a strategy, you know, to make a social commentary with our arts. And I give myself space and give the readers and also the artists spaces to, you know, we have the right, we still have the right to say something about religious life that we experience, even though we are not a scholar or anything like that.
Yes, thank you. That was very insightful. And in particular, I want to really explore what you mentioned about people nowadays. Just by reading the title of some commentary, they will immediately reject it or accept it and share it, depending on whether it reflects their own worldview. Maybe this was not always the case. Maybe when we were younger, people were more patient and willing to entertain like a long argument and, you know, think meaningfully. But one thing that, in my experience, the internet has done is it makes people impatient and encourages people to jump to their own conclusions rather than giving the other person the benefit of the doubt. So what I would like to ask you is, as a storyteller, you've been telling stories since you were a young girl. And growing up into your career now, what do you think are the differences back then versus when you entered this internet age of websites, of social media, of TikTok, and so on?
That have been differences. For example, when I started publish my novel in 2006, and social media back then, were different. I'm merely depending on the old kind of distribution for books, and depend on my publisher, for example, to spread it, to distribute it, and rarely get feedbacks from readers. It's really difficult, the situation right now, when almost daily I got at least 2 or 3 person who, you know, my books or read it or just begin to read it, or a friend gave it to them and then they just put, you know. So I got, as a writer, I got feedback more and more faster compared to, you know, 10 years ago, for example. And also it becomes an interesting interaction between the author and the readers, because, you know, many people, for example, they can reach me and ask why the ending is like this, or is it true that the ending is like this, because it's most of my stories are open-ended. So it becomes a dialogue and a discussion, and I always ask back to them, like, what do you think? It's the ending. And then they can answer anything, like, oh, I don't know, you know. But I think it's kind of interesting dialogue and feedbacks, because the readers, you know, can reach the creator faster, and the creator also got a chance to, you know, see things from different perspective from the time that when she started the works, for example. So I think the social media sphere makes the creation get more interesting, and also the audience can actually also contribute to the work as well, to the next work of the author, of the creator. So it becomes more and more interactive these days.
Yeah, and as you mentioned a while ago, that collaboration with other artists is something that happened wonderfully with your work. It's like a multimedia art form now, where your story gets translated into audio, into dance, into illustrations, I suppose. That's just very, very cool. Are there other key advantages of the online medium? Because after you mentioned the advantages of this online medium, I want to go now to the disadvantages of the online medium in your experience. So I suppose another advantage that you've mentioned is that this international audience, right? Like the translation, localization of your stories into other languages, and therefore reaching other countries around the world. So can you tell us more about these other advantages of this online medium?
Yeah, definitely. Like you mentioned about readers from other countries, and I got, you know, feedback and responses from Italy, for example. And, you know, and it happened so fast, like even though they comment in Italian, and you know, I get, you know, at least I can get what's the main point that they want to address by, you know, just click translate, for example. It's becoming more and more part of our daily life when people can reach anyone in any part of the world easily. I think there's still the advantages, especially in this pandemic times, when our movement, our mobility are very limited. So it's really useful to use the online medium to, you know, spread my ideas and the stories, etc. However, that's not how I started in 2017, because when I initiated, when I and my team initiated the movement or the campaign, Relax, It's Just Religion, my first thought was to create more and more offline activities, because as I observed back then, probably up until now, social media make us live in our own bubble of algorithm, right? So we just got the content that has been responded by our previous behavior, and algorithm responded. So, you know, we just tend to get the same content afterwards. And also I observed that people tend to react it or behave differently when we, you know, when we just text something, and when we actually sit together, you know, people, I observe how people can be very aggressive in their emails, for example, or in their tweets or whatever, but we actually meet the people in person, they're very calm, they are soft-spoken. I've observed so many things happened like that. So many people are like that. So that's why in 2017, when I started this, I tend to bring it more to offline. So online or social media is only one tool to support the, you know, the spreading of information, whatever. But I tend to bring it to offline when I begin with. But then we know that the pandemic happened, so, you know, we cannot do such offline activities so often, you know. So yeah, but I think at the same time, thanks to social media and all, we still have those kind of conversations even though we have the pandemic. So I think just that's the complexity of the situation that we have now.
Moving now more into the challenges, your stories actually challenge longer standing narratives, right? Like Islam is this, Islam is that, like other religions are this, other religions are that. Like that's been going on for decades, if not centuries. And your stories are just new. So do you think that the online medium, social media, websites, the internet, make it easier to challenge longstanding narratives? Or do you think there are different ways that it makes it easier and makes it more difficult?
So I post my first short stories in the book online. So I posted online first in late 2016, actually. And the first story I launched in online was Porky Wants to Be a Muslim, in Indonesian version, which a story of a female pig who wants to convert to Islam. So, and I launched it in the time when there was a huge demonstration related to a blasphemy case who some people believe that our former governor of Jakarta, Pak Basuki Cahayama, did. And it was a highly political, you know, highly political influence back then in 2016, because he ran for the election to the period. So when I launched that, the story online, you know, the good thing that it can spread and share fast enough to reach people that I targeted, okay, that probably willing to be open enough to other things, that to different kind of perspectives, but also at the same time it makes me vulnerable to be targeted as a, you know, from by the people who got different opinion, you know. And it did happen, because at that time some people, for example, will label it as, you know, oh, this author should be leftist or communist or those kind of, you know, things that people labeled in Indonesia when they see things, when they see strange things or different things or different kind of people. But interestingly enough, I then learned there is a differences when people read news, online news, and online stories. So it also becomes my, you know, like social experiment kind of things when I start this work, because the situation got tense at that time, and so I observe how people reacted online when they read the article that so it was published on the same online publication. It's on the tick.com. So the tick.com, for example, they published the news, Feby Nirani launched Bukan Prawan Maria, blah blah blah, and then people reacted harshly towards the news. But at the same time, when the same platform published one of my stories, which about raising the issue about the very loud voice from the neighborhood mosque, and the character in the story created various scenarios to kill the person who who do the call prayers, you know, the title was Rencana Pembunuhan Sang Muazzin, so the plot to kill the muazzin. The Tikom published the story and published the news about the book launch, and people reacted differently, you know, like totally different. In the news, they react so harshly, and in the story, they even support the main characters in the story, you know, and they also raised the concern, yes, most or religious people cannot be like this, blah, blah, blah. So I guess that's how, there's a ray of hope in, you know, storytelling kind of things, because when people provided with stories, it's just touch, you know, different part of their brain, you know, so it gives them, you know, that precious pause that I've mentioned earlier, and people, you know, just okay, I'm curious, I'm triggered, I want to read more about the story, and then only like after 5 minutes afterwards, we become slightly different person, I guess, because that's how I found people can react very different, even though it's on the same platform, online news platform. So yeah, that's some experiment that I've been, you know, observed so far.
That's quite inspiring. And we will go back to that after this question, where I ask you, other than the harsh reaction to that news story, like maybe there were harsh emails sent to you. I don't know what other harsh messages, maybe even threats were sent to you, because some of the titles that you have just mentioned, I imagine are very, very controversial. And if they just read the title, then without reading the entire story, yeah, which is a very common thing online nowadays, like I wouldn't be surprised if they sent you harsh messages. But other than these harsh responses from civil society, what are the other challenges that you have faced as a storyteller, especially online? And I'm looking at government, legislation, maybe there are challenges that are native to the medium itself. Maybe Facebook has censorship, community guidelines, and so on. Can you tell us about such challenges?
Yeah, at the state level, I think one of the thing that I want to highlight is we still have the problematic blasphemy law. You know, it's been targeted beyond Pak Basuki Cahaya Purnama's case. It's been targeted, I think, more than 100 cases related to blasphemy case. So as a writer, I think it's also, you know, haunted me, because I don't want to be considered as blasphemy, because I can go to jail, you know, for that. And also the information and electronic transition bill is also quite problematic these days, because you know, people can be considered against the government, for example, or even though we just, you know, conveying our opinion, but we can considered by others, you know, like making such a, you know, bad impacts for their brand, etc., etc. So I think at the state level we still have the problematic laws and problematic bills to protect our, you know, freedom of expression. And yeah, I guess, and at the for the platform itself, I think you know, some of my friends have been, because nowadays it's still a thin line and widely debated about freedom of speech and hate speech. So sometimes I haven't been experienced that, but some of my friends got you know, blocked or by Facebook, for example, because some people reported them. Although what they actually do, what they actually do is only expressing their point of view, for example. So I think there's always been, there's still things to consider and to solve between the freedom of expression and, you know, how to avoid hate speech, because hate speech is it is dangerous, and it has caused a lot of, you know, victims in the world, like what happened in France last year, for example. Hate speech from media social, you know, from social media, and caused the murder of a French history teacher Samuel Paty, for example. So we don't want that, those kind of things to happen, but, you know, so it's, we really need to improve that.
Thank you. And as I promised, we'll go to the more inspiring side, like the response, for example, to people reading the story versus people reading the news article. I find that super interesting, by the way. Can you tell me about other successful stories? And in particular, I'm looking for people who've sincerely changed their minds. Like you mentioned, like people were actually rooting for the protagonist in one of the stories. But are there stories that really stick out in your memory as far as people who, before reading your story, were one way, and then they read their story, and then they become a different person?
Well, most of my readers feel that they have, you know, first of all, they're not alone, and that's important. And, you know, it happens that, well, it happens often in offline meetings, for example, offline events, when one female student, you know, daring herself to stand up in front of the people and say that, you know, this is my first day to go out without wearing hijab, and probably my family, you know, one consider me as their part of family anymore because of this. So those kind of things. So it gives people courage, you know, sense of courage. It gives people you know, at least an opportunity or a chance to question things in their mind, because when it relates to religion and God, most of Indonesians were educated and taught not to question anything. But since religion is always the one of the most significant, if it's not the most significant part in our society or Indonesian society, so it's so easy for some people or some groups to use a religious argument, or use some argument in the name of religion, even only their interpretation, to, you know, to scare people, you know. So I think for most of my readers, what they have been told me was they start to have a guts to questions. They start to have a chance, you know, to, oh, so this is this okay? I mean, so the question that I have been in my mind for some, you know, years, and other people actually publish that kind of question, and wow, it's okay to have that question. So those kind of things, and I think it's really important to, you know, flourish critical thinking again, you know.
Thank you so much for that. Now, you mentioned a while ago that initially when you started this movement, the Relax is Just Religion, you initially focused on offline events, in-person events, and definitely there's something that cannot be replaced by online activities, this face-to-face interaction.
Yeah.
But now the pandemic has, I don't know how long we will stay in this state of mostly doing things online, like when the safety will be at such a level where offline events can be the norm again. But can you tell or share with our listeners and viewers, like what you've learned now that you've been doing more activities online that you wished you knew early on? Or another way of phrasing this question is, if someone in Indonesia wanted to contribute to the online movement for a more progressive, tolerant version of Islam, or more freedom of religion and belief, like what tips would you give to people who want to start now?
Okay. I think we have so many discussions and online community related to this topic of freedom of religion and belief and spreading tolerant Islam. So we can always, we don't have to start it ourselves, like to begin something very new. We can just, you know, collaborate. It's really important to collaborate these days, and all the internet and social media, I think that's the best part of internet and social media, is to make us easier to collaborate with anyone in the world. Like, for example, well, with our neighbor Malaysia, they also have similar experience in terms of campaigning tolerant Islam and freedom of religious and belief, for example. So we can, you know, work together with people anywhere in the world to spread our, you know, our concern, our message, our campaign. However, it's really important to, you know, to be aware that we live in those algorithm bubble kind of things. So it's really important to burst our bubble every now and then and see what people think, or, you know, concern on the other side of the of you know, the other side of the wall, you know. So, and also, even though, well, of course now it's a difficult time for our physical mobility, but I don't think social media is to replace a long walking and deep thinking, you know, and doing things like field researcher, or, you know, investigating more, you know, in the field among people. I mean, so it can be, it's nice to have online platform, but we should always be aware that we should combine it also with, you know, with some other things in physical world, because many we need to be aware that many things in social media is, you know, it's more symbolic kind of things, and it's really noisy, and it can be difficult for people to, you know, to learn to see the issues that really important. And it can be just replaced by other more interesting things, and, you know, so we can be easily distracted in social media. That's what I'm trying to say. So I think social media it's good, and just, you know, just join any kind of activities or groups that are related to your concern. If you concerned with freedom of religious and belief, and then probably we can collaborate together with Relax. It's just really, because it's actually not only for Muslims, it's open for everyone, because we know that everyone from different religions, because we know that religions, conservatism or hardliners are not only in Muslim groups, it's also in other religion as well. So, for example, I have been approached by, you know, people from Christian background, from LGBTQ groups, and said that he wanted to do something related to, you know, raising the awareness or promoting LGBTQ's right in Christian context, for example. And we definitely can collaborate with that, you know. So, yeah, that's the thing.
So I'll take that as an invitation to our audiences, our listeners and viewers, right?
Like
in the Asia Pacific, you've heard it from Febby. If you want to join the movement, no matter what religion you're from or what country you're from, do check out the Relax, It's Just Religion. There's a website for this. I will make sure to add it in the description of this video. But would you like to mention the name of the website here?
The website is still in the developing process. But you can always reach us in Instagram, Relax, It's Just Religion. And also, you can read some of the stories online in English or in Indonesian if you read the language. So yeah, I think collaborate. Let's do this. I mean, that's let's use the internet, the platform, to, you know, to reach a greater good. And let's use it and not let ourselves be misused by the platform.
Thank you so much, Febby. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Brad. My pleasure.
That was quite the inspiring conversation. One note that Febby made sure we added to this podcast is to mention that in 2017, there was a significant change to the national ID, where previously other religions or beliefs who could not write their identity in the religion slot can now do so. So a lot of people are, of course, very happy about that. And she hopes that it is just one of the many different kinds of progress that will happen in this realm. It is quite a good conversation, but when I think about takeaways, I really liked her point about the need for there to be deep thinking. The change from the offline activities that she did into the online activities really emphasized to her that the online medium is a very different one. So although you can have conversations in the online space, the meaningful digestion of stories and narratives, that deep thinking, like going on long walks, as she mentioned, is still quite important. So there has to be these breaks. Although we are getting more and more used to this online space, we still cannot forget that there are things outside of this online world. And maybe that kind of recharging and deep thinking will allow us to engage in online platforms in a more meaningful and productive way. So thank you for listening to this conversation. If you haven't yet, do make sure that you also listen to the conversation that we had last time. It is quite related to this one. Do make sure as well that you subscribe to the video on Cinemata, to the podcast on engagemedia.org/podcast. And until the next time, on behalf of Engage Media, see you next time.